Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Chris Mannix is a senior writer over at Sports Illustrated. What a busy day it has been in the NBA. What a night it was last night. Let's make Chris the Giant Interview.
Now it's the Giant Interview, presented by A-Team Roofing. Online at ateamroofers.com. The A-Team Roofing Giant Interview on 92.9's Jason and John Show.
Chris, all-time performance, obviously, last night from Kevin Durant. But here's my question to you. Does that game say more about Kevin Durant or Giannis?
You know, I think Giannis, and to an equal extent, Mike Budenholzer, the head coach. You know, Durant, that goes on the Durant Mount Rushmore of great games, but we've seen him do great things in the past, most notably the 2017 NBA Finals, where he was a driving force behind Golden State's win over Cleveland that year. So it was remarkable, but we've seen it from Durant on this level before. Giannis had the opportunity of a lifetime. You know, his team is up 16 points. James Harden's out there is basically a decoy. And he was part of a Bucks team, led a Bucks team, that fumbled the game away. And in critical moments where he had to make free throws, he couldn't. Where he had to simply catch a pass and dunk it, he didn't. When he had a mismatch against James Harden, he faded away. I mean, these, you know, the low-light reel for Giannis in that Game 5 was extensive. And I think that's more a reflection of his failure than anyone's success.
Do you ever see him getting? We've used the phrase killer instinct, and it seems it's more than just that. But it sure does stand out when you watch what KD did, and then you watch Giannis. Is killer instinct something you can acquire and develop, or are you either born with it or you're not?
You can acquire and develop it. I mean, I think in some ways LeBron did. You know, through the midway point of his career. You know, and I liken the next two games for Giannis to what LeBron went through back in 2011.
That's interesting.
If you remember, you know, LeBron, really actually it was 2012, the 2012 conference finals against Boston, when the Heat were coming off a finals loss to Dallas the year before, and they went down 3-2 in the conference finals against Boston. And LeBron had to go to Boston for game six and play one of the greatest games of his career for Miami to win and eventually win a game seven in that series. If they had gone down to Boston and lost in the playoffs, you know, before a championship and back-to-back years, you know, his legacy might be markedly different in the NBA. So, you know, it's not over. I mean, and look, the Nets are still flawed. You know, Kyrie's not going to play in game six. Harden, I don't imagine that groin is going to be considerably better, you know, for this game. So it might be the Durant show once again. So Giannis will have opportunities, but this is a career-defining couple of games for Giannis. If he goes out in six games, you know, the vultures that have pointed out that he's just a regular season player are going to circle.
You know, you mentioned it. I mean, you got James Harden, you got Kyrie Irving. The news today, of course, about Kawhi Leonard. Mike Conley's dealing with the bum hamstring. So many players in these playoffs have either suffered or had to deal with. Joel Embiid's on a meniscus right now. Do you think, Chris, we're going to look back in, you know, 3, 4, 5 years at this sort of time, and ultimately COVID is going to get blamed for this?
Nah, I mean, if you want to do a deep dive on it, I mean, but I don't know how many people, you know, look at championships and say, well, you know, that one they only won because COVID and, you know, the number of injuries that they had. I mean, I'm certain that in some season over the last 40 years, there has been a season something like this, where you've had a whole bunch of guys get injured during the playoffs. I mean, if you want to, you know, look at it a different way, I mean, the Houston Rockets have two championships in large part because Michael Jordan wasn't there for those 2 years. I mean, were those asterisk championships in any way? No, I just think, you know, you really have to want it to kind of, you know, put a mark next to whoever wins a championship, because it's not like any of these teams are without injury. I mean, yeah, I guess Milwaukee's the least injured team, and they're the one maybe in the most trouble right now. I mean, every other team out there that's still in it has some kind of issue, you know, whether it's Philadelphia or, you know, even Atlanta a little bit with Trae Young's shoulder, and, you know, the Jazz and Clippers have their own serious injuries. I mean, everybody's kind of dealing with something. So, in a way, it levels the playing field to a degree. So, I think that, you know, 5 years from now, hell, we may not even remember who the champion was. I don't even know who the champion was 5 years ago. Was it Golden State? I don't know. I mean, it was time moves quickly, and people move on very quickly. I think this year and the issues with it will be quickly forgotten.
Is it as simple, Chris, as it's over, that Utah-Clippers series with Kawhi looking at an ACL injury? And not just this year for them, what you know, the near future, next year, what's that look like if this is really Kawhi and ACL and out for, you know, 8 months, whatever it's going to be?
Well, short term, it significantly hurts the Clippers. No doubt about that. All that being said, you know, no Mike Conley in Game 5. Donovan Mitchell clearly still hampered by the ankle injury. I don't know. I mean, I think the Clippers could still potentially pull it off, but it will take, you know, the same kind of effort and more from Paul George in Game 5 that he had in Game 4. So we'll see what happens there tonight. Long term, it's definitely a bigger issue. I mean, if that's an ACL tear, and that's what, you know, preliminary reports seem to suggest,
yep,
you know, that might kill his entire next season. I mean, you could see Kawhi opt into that contract instead of opt out, and you know, stick it out rehab for another full year. I mean, those ACL injuries, as we've seen with Klay Thompson and others, you know, if they don't cost you the full season, practically speaking, you know, you don't come back the same player when you come back with the first few months. So this is absolutely a potential franchise altering injury for the Clippers if Kawhi does have a significant ACL tear.
On the other side of that, we got Game 5, Hawks and 76ers tonight. You know, for the first, I guess, three games of that series, I think we were all kind of saying the same things. Like, how is Joel Embiid doing this on a torn meniscus? Like, he doesn't look like he has one. And then Game 4, you know, that might have been the first time we were like, okay, you can sort of see it catching up to him. Do you think that continues tonight, or do you think we see the Joel Embiid that we saw in Games 1 through 3?
Yeah, honestly, I think Embiid bounces back in this game. He had a terrible Game 4. You know, the second half was brutal, obviously, 0 for 12, and then that final possession where, you know, a fully healthy Joel Embiid would have flushed that pass in the paint, and, you know, he was just kind of drifting in and flicking up a layup. So he's not going to get over that injury anytime soon, but you know, the Sixers play better on their home floor. I think he'll get a jolt of energy. Joel's always engaged with the crowd in these Sixers home games. On top of that, I think Ben Simmons will play a lot better. He didn't play well at all in Game 4. They still had a chance to win at the very end, you know, despite blowing that 18-point lead. So I'm actually expecting the Sixers to win big in this Game 5. Doesn't mean they're going to win the series, because I think Atlanta can go home and win as well. But I am expecting a bounce-back type of game for Embiid. My bigger concern is that this injury is going to make him 75-80% of himself for the rest of the playoffs, and I don't know how you win if you're Philadelphia with Embiid, you know, playing at that type of strength. Once you go up against whether it's Brooklyn or any of the teams in the Western Conference, that's where, to me, it looms larger.
If you were picking it today, Chris, and it's changed for us so much. I mean, at one point, you know, the Clippers are down to Dallas, and they storm back, and they've stormed back in this one, but now Kawhi's gone. So in terms of picking, you know, after LeBron's out, in terms of picking who's going to make the finals, it's sort of changed for us over the last couple of weeks. If you were picking it today, would you say Nets-Phoenix? Would you still – you said the Bucks are still in this, and I agree with you. Who would you pick if you're picking finals today, and is it an easy answer in the West? Do you like the way Phoenix is playing?
I like the way Phoenix is playing, but, I mean, they have had by far the easiest path to get to the conference finals. I mean, you know, they looked like they were in some trouble before Anthony Davis went down. He gets hurt, and all of a sudden, you know, they're back in the ball game there. Then they beat the, you know, artists formerly known as the Nuggets, you know, with that group. And, you know, I mean, you just can't – that Nuggets the way the Nuggets played was more of an indictment of Portland, I think, than anything that Phoenix did. I mean, the fact that Denver,
well put,
with a midseason acquisition, mm-hmm, and, you know, a 30-year-old rookie in the backcourt, you know, you're not going to win a series like that against Chris Paul and Devin Booker. So they're still, in my mind, untested against the top team. And look, I still like Utah. I mean, I think Utah does get through this series. And the more time that goes by, the more time that, you know, obviously Mike Conley has to heal, Donovan Mitchell has to heal. And I've been pretty consistent throughout that I thought the Jazz were the best team in the Western Conference, not just record-wise, but they were the best team. You know, they were equipped this year to get to the NBA Finals. I still believe that. So this is obviously a big break for them, you know, with Kawhi being hurt. But, if you know, a Jazz-Sun series, if that's the way it plays out, I would favor Utah as long as Mike Conley is able to go out and play.
Yeah, of course, talking to Chris Mannix, senior writer for Sports Illustrated here on the show. What's the sort of autopsy on the Stan Van Gundy era in New Orleans?
Well, you know, you heard all season long about issues between Van Gundy and the younger players. Like, Stan, you know, he chafes guys. Like, he runs these two-hour shoot-arounds sometimes. I mean, he's brutal at times with kind of how he deals with younger players. Not to say he can't do it. I mean, he had a lot of success with Jameer Nelson, Dwight Howard, you know, other guys in Orlando, a measure of success in Detroit. But he just didn't find any kind of chemistry with Brandon Ingram and with Zion and with the young guys on that team. Now, you know, I was told it was a mutual decision. Like, Stan realized this wasn't working and, you know, kind of wanted to bail out in a way, just like New Orleans realized it wasn't working and was done with him. But, yeah, it's not like Stan had a complete year to get him, put his imprint on it. I mean, he had a two-week training camp and, you know, a season with no practice time, which Stan bellyached about a lot during the season. So I don't know that he would have. I don't know that he would have been able to turn around, but it was pretty clear to people in New Orleans that this young team needed a change. Now they have to be careful here because Zion's going to have his third coach in 3 years, and mm-hmm, that's not something you want to do with young guys. So they're going to have to find somebody that makes sense. But it became pretty clear early on that, you know, Stan's, I don't know if his relatability to that roster just wasn't there.
Do you feel like Ingram and Zion can, with the right coach, make that work? Some of us have thought, well, with the way they both need the ball, that's not going to work. Now, we've seen situations where great players that both need the ball have come together. It's worked. I mean, it does in the Nets when they're all together. Does that construction work for you, Chris, Brandon,
yeah,
and Zion?
I think it works. I mean, they're both elite scorers, but you need two elite scorers to be successful in today's NBA. And across the league, I mean, Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook, to a degree, made it work. Go back even further, Durant and Russell Westbrook made it work at a high level. I mean, it all comes down to their mindset if they, you know, want to be teammates together. And by all indications, they're on good terms. They're good. So, I think that's not really the issue. The issue is going to be for David Griffin and finding a coach that can be there for 5 years and develop those guys and filling in the roster around them, getting shooters around Zion and Ingram to take pressure off them defensively. You know, figuring out the center position there, you know, alongside Zion. How is that going to work? These, to me, are more pressing concerns than any potential chemistry issues with Zion and Brandon Ingram.
I don't think many on draft night would have said, we think John Morant's going to make the playoffs with the Grizzlies before Zion does with the Pelicans. But that is indeed what happened. John Morant made it with the Grizzlies in year two. What's the upshot for the Grizzlies in terms of, all right, you got the taste. You won a game. You won a game in the playoffs against the Jazz. So what should be next for the Memphis Grizzlies in terms of their trajectory here with Ja and the rest of this team?
Well, it's win a series. And you look at the history of young teams, like these experiences like Memphis had are really invaluable. I mean, Oklahoma City, to bring them up again, you go back to 2010 when they were the 8th seed and got, you know, beat up by the Lakers in the first round. I mean, everyone from Durant to Scott Brooks to Westbrook will say that really served as a springboard for them going into next year. They knew what the playoffs were like. They kind of had an understanding of what it would take to succeed, and they were able to build off that. I would hope that Memphis is able to do a lot of the same things. Now, there are obvious things you want to fill in. More shooting is obviously paramount.
Yep.
With any team in the league. I mean, you want the continued maturation of Ja Morant and Dylan Brooks. I thought it was a travesty that Dylan Brooks didn't get second team all defense. I voted for him for that slot. I mean, I don't understand the thinking there. But I think he's got a big upside on both ends of the floor. And, you know, just continue to build slowly. I mean, you've got to add probably, I mean, obviously Jaren Jackson has to stay healthy for an entire season, but yeah, you've got to just add pieces around those guys and hope they fit. But, you know, in every possible way, I thought this season was a success for Memphis to get to the playoffs, get a taste of it, and now being able to build off it going forward, that's huge for a young team.
Do you still see something? You led me right to my question, was about Jaren. You know, at one point we're saying, okay, the two pillars are going to be Ja and Jaren, and then Dylan goes out and has a spectacular year. We're putting them as part of the future now. Do you still see something special with Jaren when you watch him? I'm with you that the biggest key for him is staying on the floor, but do you still think you've got a special player potentially in Jaren Jackson?
Yeah, I do, and okay. In the brief time we've seen him and Ja, like, I think there's the potential for dynamic chemistry. I mean, Jaren can do a lot, you know, step up beyond the three-point line as athletic. I mean, he's, that pick-and-roll combination, especially when Jaren is at five, is really, really good. So, I think it's just key to getting them reps out there on the floor together. I mean, it's been, you know, rocky for Jaren staying out there, and that raises some red flags. I mean, you know, there's a lot of guys that go through that early in their career, but you need to see him give you, you know, 75, 80 games in this next season. But if he can stay healthy, I absolutely still see a lot of potential with Jackson. In fact, like, you know, if he's healthy all the way next year, I mean, if you're Memphis, you want to be fighting for that 4-5 slot. You really do. I think they've got enough talent. And with natural development, you should be in contention for one of those upper-tier playoff spots.
Chris, man, great stuff as always. We appreciate the time.
Love your stuff,
thank
Chris.
You.
Thank you.
You got it, guys.
He is Chris Mannix, Sports Illustrated senior writer.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.